I'm just going to say a word about methodology. And the reason I'm only going to say a word, because sometimes people ask me what I do or what I'm going to do. And the answer is I don't really know. So I really can't speak much about it. But what I will do is, as we learn today, I will exaggerate a couple of things in terms of approach, and we'll see if I continue with it. One thing, if you need an English chumash, please bring a chumash with English. That's good. I did bring a little translation, but it just will tend to make the sources much longer than they need to be. So therefore, it's better if you need it. So my assumption is that if you need it, you'll bring a chumash with English. Okay, we're going to start with the end of the parasha. V'yichi kol ha'aretz. Now, there's two things that we look for when we read. One thing that we look for is what it says, and the second thing that we look for is what it doesn't say. And obviously, what it doesn't say is more difficult to discern compared to what it does say, but we will look for both. V'yichi kol ha'aretz safa echad udvarim achadim. And the entire world, or land, that's better, was one language and of unified things. Dvarim achadim means that there was a sense of unity. Vayihi bin sa'am mikedem, and as they traveled or migrated east, from the east, sorry, vayimtzu bik'a be'eretz shinar v'yishvu sham. They found a valley in the land of Shinar and they settled there. Now, what so far we're told is there is some kind of context. The context is Vayihi bin Sami Kedem. Whatever this Kedem is it just geography or is it also a question of chronology? That I'm not going to get into, but that's an important question. They settled there. Vayomer ish el Reyehu, one says to his other, the word Reyehu here is actually a word which has warmth to it. The reason I say that is later on we'll have v'yahavta l'reacha kamocha. Re'a means friend. Re'a means a companion. So re'im ahuvim, like in the bracha that we say by Sheva Brachot. Re'a is a companion. V'yomer ish areyehu, so that already gives this sense of togetherness, which already was hinted at in the first verse, u'dvrim achadim. There was a sense of unity. V'yomer ish areyehu, Havanil banal levenim v'nisrefal esrefa v'tiyilem hamlevinal la'avin b'chemer hayalahem lachomer. Here I'll use this translation that I have here. Come, let us mold bricks and fire them. They then had bricks to use as stone and asphalt for mortar. Pasuk dalid v'yomer havanivnelanu ir and let us build for ourselves a city. U'migdal v'roshel b'shamayim. It will have a tower whose top reaches the heavens. V'naselanu shem, and we'll make for ourselves a name. Pen nafutza p'nechol aretz, lest we be dispersed throughout the land, or scattered throughout the land. So let's pause here for a second. And I'm going to ask you to do something which for some of you will be difficult. Tell me what it is that they did, but tell me without Rashi. Because obviously what Rashi is going to do here is he's going to fill in all kinds of missing information. Because, as you'll know, let's start even maybe a step earlier. Is what they did something, was this good or is this bad when we read these first four verses? So we have a sense of the building, which, by the way, the most detail which is shared in this whole section has to do with the construction. That is given more attention than anything else, which if you really would think about it, it's completely unnecessary, right? It could have just said, and they built a tower. It could have just said they built a city, which means why exactly do I care what materials they used when they built their tower? So I'm just pointing out, Pasuk Gimel has within it detail, while we don't have this kind of detail for all kinds of other things over here. Okay, what's missing in these first four verses? What's missing in these four verses? You look at me like I'm crazy. What?
No, the inhabitants. Well, they know
identity, say it. God is not in the first four verses. Now, again, some of us have been brought up with this idea, which will go something like this. So if you want, we can look at source number 9, which is Rashi. Udvrim achadim, they were words of unity, a sense of unity. Bo be'etza achat, they came and they plotted together. Va'amru lokol himenu sheyavor lanu et elyonim, because we're not going to sit around and wait till we're attacked from above. Na'ale l'rakia v'nase imo milchama. Let's go into the heavens and we will declare war against God. So, again, Rashi is obviously, he's not making this up. Rashi has rabbinic sources for this, and the rabbinic sources are filling in the missing information. The missing information is really going to be based upon the verses that I haven't gotten to. Namely, God comes down and God takes action against this. But when we read the first four verses, I just wanted to point out that there does not sound anything which is necessarily ominous within the actions which they did. And I'll say it again. In fact, God is not mentioned at all, which may be quite significant. Rashi continues in source 9, Davar acha al yichudo shel olam. They challenged against the unity of the world, which means against the existence of one God. Davar acha v'davir machadim. Amru achat li elef v'sheish miot chamishim v'sheish shanim. Once every approximately 1,656 years, harakia mitmotet, the heavens collapse. Kishem shasabi mehamabul bov naselu smuchot. Let's try to, you know, fix it and heal this, which means you have scientists. Scientists make observations, and when you make observations, then you can see patterns. So they say, oh, it happened, which is really a remarkable statement. But what they're saying is, let us again take God out of the picture, and we realize that there is a physical fault to the universe. Let's try to fix it. Now, I just want to again point out, with all of these interpretations, there's something which is, again, nevertheless troublesome, and that is, again, very simple question. What is it that was so bad here? What is it which was so bad about what they did? Okay, that's the first question that I want to pose. I actually have a couple of other questions that I want to pose. The second one is, if Rashi is correct, and again, don't take this the wrong way, but if Rashi is correct that what they want to do is they want to go up to heaven and wage war against God, what would be the best place for them to start building? Say it. The highest mountain that you can find. Correct? Go to the highest mountain. Start already when you're up, who knows how many, you know, meters or feet, and from there, build your tower into heaven. Why start, if you're going to build a tower to heaven, why go to a valley? And again, if you miss the valley part, go back again to the first source. V'kola'am, kola'aretz afa'achad drum achadim, v'yihi b'nesam mikedem nitzu bik'ah be'eretz shinar v'yishvu sham. They found a valley in the land of Shinar, and that is where they settled. And from there they start to build. So, and by the way, I'll point out another thing which some of the commentaries correctly point out. If they're on a mountain, then how do you build when you're on a mountain? You quarry stones. Right? Think about ancient building you've seen in Israel. What do? You quarry stones. Who knows how they got all those big stones, but you put one big stone on top of another big stone, another big stone, and it's much easier building than what was described to us over here. And again, I'm pointing out, the most information that we had to do with the building. So far, what do we know and what don't we know? You going to answer what we know and what we don't know? No, you have your own agenda. I know you already. You're back to Rashi. Rashi's interpretation is going to be based upon God's response, which means afterwards God comes back. Now, again, what do we know and what don't we know? We know that people gather together. We know that there is this sense of unity. We know that they want to build a city and build a tower to it. We don't necessarily yet know why they want to build a tower, even though the text told us why they want to build it. What did it say? It told us why. That's not what the text said. You have to quote the words. It's the only right answer is to quote the words right now.
I think the bad thing
No, you will keep doing this. You all give me different answers. Yeah. Okay, good, good. So the. Good. Which is good or bad? It's a bad thing to emulate God. Okay, we can argue about that. Can you please tell me what it actually says in terms of what their motivation is? Okay, good, good. So the word which it uses, good. The word that it uses is, so okay, back in the first verse, chapter 11, verse 4, it tells us why they build it. Vayomru, hava nivne lanu ir, we will build a city, nivne lanu ir, umigdol, and a tower, virosho bashamayim, the top of it will reach into the heavens, v'naset lanu shem, we will make whatever the word shame means over here. Okay? And then the last part of it, what? The last part of it is what's particularly intriguing. Pen nafutz al pnei kol aretz, lest we be dispersed, which of course is what happens. If we were reading this as non-religious, non-believing individuals, then we would approach this text and say, "Oh, here is a text which is presenting a myth, and the myth is trying to explain how it was that people spread throughout the earth." And that's the entire purpose over here, which by the way, what certain biblical critics tend to do, but when they do that, then they completely ignore any perhaps theological significance to the text. And I think that we should be doing quite the opposite. What we should be looking for is the theological significance of the text, and the whole other part of it is really secondary to me. Just look quickly. We looked at Rashi in 9. Look at the Radak in source number 10. V'rosho b'shamayim, and this tower is going to reach the heaven. V'ze eino kimashma'o. It's not like it sounds. Ki lo hayu tipshim lasot milchama mamash. They were not so stupid that you would think that you can really wage war. Which means the Radak is already warning us. Don't think that things are as they are stated, that there things are a lot deeper over here than you would perhaps think. The word tipshim, we'll see, will actually be hurled back and forth between all the commentaries, or a number of commentaries, and I'll hopefully show you more about that as we move on. Let's go back to the first source again, and now look at God's response. Pasuk Hey. Here you do not have the English, so I apologize. Vayered Hashem lirot et ha'ir ve'et ha'migdal shabanu b'nei ha'adam. God descends, which is also, just in terms of the metaphor, is interesting. It's almost like a seesaw. They want to go up into the heavens, and God comes down from the heavens, which may indicate that God was far more successful in coming down than they were in going up. Vayered Hashem lirot et ha'ir ve'et ha'migdal shabanu b'nei ha'adam. It may be significant that they're called specifically b'nei ha'adam over here, which may go back to earlier sins in terms of Adam, could have called them many other names. Vayomer Hashem, hin am echad v'safa echad l'kulam. They are one people, one language. V'zechilam lasot. And this is what they start to do. V'ataluyu v'tzer mehem kol ashe yazomu lasot. God says, I'm not going to allow them to do that which they're plotting to do. Halva nerda, again, go down. V'nivla, sham svatam, going to confuse their language. Asher lo yishmu ish svat re'ehu. Each one will not understand his fellow's language. V'yafatz Hashem otam misham, and God then dispersed them. Al pnei kol ha'aretz, face of the whole land. V'echdu levno te'ir, and they stopped to build the city. By the way, it's interesting. It doesn't mention the tower. This, I mean, it could have just as easily then they stopped to build the city and the tower. No, they stopped to build the city. Again, if we're going to go to our supposed myth, so here's not only a myth to how people gets dispersed, it's also then would provide information why people speak different languages. But as I said, that is of far less interest to me. Alkein Karashma Bavel, and therefore this place was called Bavel, Kisham Balal Hashem Svat Kol Aretz, Umisham Hifitzam Hashem Al Pnei Kol Aretz. And here God mixed them up, and here God dispersed them through the whole land. So in verses 8 through 9, we have God's name mentioned numerous times. where God is not mentioned at all in verses 1 through 4. So basically, we have an absence of God in 1 through 4. God comes down and gets involved in the other verses. And it sounds as if there is, quote-unquote, a sin taking place. It sounds as if they've done something wrong. It sounds as if there's displeasure on God's part. And therefore, it sounds as if there's some kind of a punishment. I will remind you that there are verses that tell us, and one day that all of man will speak the same language, and one day there will be unity, and so on, which means the idea of unity and speaking one language is not a bad thing per se. The question is what happens and what we do with the unity. So again, what it is that they did is not completely clear. Second question that we still have remaining, if they want to build a big tower, if that's the whole thing, you want to wage war, you want to go into heaven, where should you build it from? Build it from the highest mountain. Pause for 1 second, and I'll take your point. And source number 2, the Gur Aryeh. The Gur Aryeh is the Maharal. It's the Maharal's commentary on Rashi. This is what's called a super commentary. He's not writing on the Chumash, he's writing on Rashi. He's the only one who I saw, but I won't claim that I did that I searched everywhere, but I did look somewhat for this. The question of why not use a mountain, and he just pushes it aside. But no, that's not a question. I don't know why it's not a question. He writes, "V'hashta lo yiksha kushya yivnu oto ba'ir." Don't ask the question, why not build it from a mountain? Shezeya kushya kasher nefaresh lo yahamigdala ze rak lalotba. Because no, because once you realize what it was for, you realize it was not to go up. V'imken yivnu oto ba'har, avalata hamigdal haya kemo ha'shamayim atzmo. The migdal, the tower itself, was like heaven. And that would not be possible in a mountain. She'ena har shehu min ha'aretz, because of a mountain which is made out of the earth, yesh lo dimyon lazeh, it's compared to it. Klal ha'davar hazeh she'migdal hazeh haya binyan al-yidei pu'ulot zarot hayadu lahem lo'to hador, which goes very similar to what you said, is that it's something which they did. Ad she'a binyan zeh mitnaged el ratzon Hashem yitbarach. Until finally what they did was, God was upset with it. But by the way, I hope you all realize something. He's not telling us anything. Which means he's avoiding trying to say this. And you'll see he'll tell us that he's not telling us himself. V'sidur lo masher sadur Hashem yitbarach. They're somehow rebelling against God's order. V'day b'zev in kan mokom laharich. And that's enough, and this is not the right place for me to say any more about this. So, to understand what the sensitivity, or what may be the sensitivity of the Maharal, let's look, we'll look at sources 3 and 4 and 5 and 6. Okay? Because they'll all say the same thing, but with slightly different takes on it. Source number 4 is a primary source. It's Medrash Rabbah. Sorry, we'll go to 3 first, but 4 is where he got it from. But we'll read 3 first then. V'amru chazal ma'aseh dor haflaga lo nitparesh. The Malbim says that according to the rabbis, tell us that the actions of the generation of the dispersal was not explained in the text. Rak navin biremez ma haya hachet shelahem min hasipur. You can only understand from hints which are left in the narrative to understand what's going on. Which means the Malbim is saying the text is not clear. In case you read this text and you did not come to the conclusion what it was that they did, very good. Why didn't you come to the conclusion? Because the text doesn't tell us what they did. All the text does is leaves us a hint. By the way, by him leaving us a hint that there is a hint, now it's up to any one of us to try to figure out what that hint was. What did you want to say before? So you hear this? So who builds in valleys? By the way, you know, in Israel, of course, the Arabs build in the valleys and the Jews build up on the mountains. So maybe that says something also. Yes? Correct. And therefore you're not agreeing that they're trying to get control of anything because they're all together. Good. Let's look at source number 4. Rav Elazar Omer Dvurim Achadim Dvurim Achad Dvurim Achadim Maaser Dor Mabul Nitparesh Maaser Dor Haflaga Lo Nitparesh. The actions of the generation of the flood is explained in the text. The outrages was explained. Right, read the end of last week's parsha, the beginning of this week's parsha, but what it was in the door in the generation of the dispersal is not explained in the text. Otan shel dor hamabul lo nishtayrim hem pleita. There was virtually no survivors from the generation of the flood. Ve'elu shel dor haflaga nishtayrim hem pleita. But there were survivors from the generation of dispersal. Elu dor hamabul ayidei sheyu shutfim begezel. So this is something which is found in a number of sources, that the final straw was that they were guilty of theft. Shenemar, we'll skip the quote. Lefichach lo nishtayrim hem pleita. Therefore, none was left. Aval eilo yidei shehayu ohavim ze et ze. But this generation of the dispersal, they loved one another. Now again, where is the Medrash getting this imagination that they loved one another? It's what I told you before. It's because it uses the word Re'ehu. Re'ehu is connected to after Re'echa Kamocha. The Medrash therefore hears that there's love and there's unity over here, and it says they loved one another. Therefore they remain, which means we don't, it's not, the Medrash is clear. We don't know from the narrative what it is that they did. By the way, now you'll understand Rashi. Again, working off of rabbinic sources, will say, I don't know what they did from the text. Oh, they went and they built this to wage war against God. Okay, just for example. But the text itself does not tell us what it is that the sin is. By the way, before we finish, I will tell you what it was that they did. I'm not going to just leave it only with questions. I will get an answer. And the answer is so terrible and so frightening that That's called foreshadowing, by the way. It's so terrible and so frightening that we'll take a little time till we get there. Okay? Rabbeinu Bachaye, in source number 5, writes, Finei apsukim sogrim hadelet ba'ad ha-machshavot ha-ra'ot shayu choshvim b'libam v'lo rutsu l'farsimam. He says the text itself closes the door about the terrible thoughts that they were thinking and does not want to publicize. Okay, which it means, it's saying there is censorship going on over here. What these people were thinking is so bad that the text could not say it. So again, I just want to stress, anybody who thinks that they read this section, oh, I understand what's going on, what we've seen now from the rabbinic tradition is that there's actually a great deal of theology over here, which is not there in the text. It's not a myth about the languages. It's not a myth about the dispersal. There's something over here which we're not being told. Look at source number 6, the Pardes Yosef, 20th century source. Writes, Od Yesh Lomar, Kevan Shador Flaga, Pashtu Yadam Beikar, Vitichudrim Kashim Klape Mala, that they rejected certain basic things and they attacked. This means not physically attacked, this means metaphysically attacked heaven, the Lonat Nuluk Tov, and therefore the things they did were so bad it could not be written. Lo nitnu lichtov, it could not be written. It was not explained. The honor of God is to suppress certain things. So therefore, it's the honor of God which is being defended here. He did throw in over here, the Mekubalim said that what they were guilty of was kitzitzu b'netiyot. Kitzitzu b'netiyot literally means, literally, it means cutting down or over pruning a tree, or cutting down a tree, pulling a tree out of the ground. That's the source. That's where it comes from. That Elisha ben Avuya, when he went up into heaven during the Paradise experience, which most likely there, it's an extension of the metaphor. The metaphor is they went into Paradise, and Paradise is some kind of metaphor for the Garden of Eden, and therefore he ripped out the very foundations of belief. So therefore, kitzitzu b'netiyot means to reject a foundation of belief. And what they did is they rejected a foundation of belief. Now, I do want to ask you something. What would be the evidence that they rejected a foundation of belief? He calls, by the way, he labeled this, it was the Mekubalim who said this. You'll see in a moment that at least one of the ones who said this was the Ramban. But what evidence is here that they rejected basic belief. Remember I told you there are two things you have to do when you read? One was look what it says, and the other was look what it doesn't say. So what didn't it say? What didn't it mention at all? God. God is not there. Now the fact that God isn't there, what conclusion is Rabbeinu Bachaye and perhaps many others drawing? It's not that, meaning, when I say that they waged war against God, there's two ways to wage war against God. One way, which sounds almost to the modern man to be infantile, let's build a tower and go up to heaven, and we're going to go and we're going to get up to heaven, and then we're going to have our primitive bow and arrows and sticks and whatever, and we're going to wage war against God. Now, again, to our mind, it's an absurdity, correct? I mean, you can't fight with God like that, or you're not going to be terribly successful. What's another way to wage war against God? Say it again. Where God is no longer an entity. God is no longer involved. God doesn't exist. God is not discussed. God is ignored. Which means when I look at the first four verses here, and there is no mention of God. So again, some of the classic comments say, oh, they're going to wage war against God. So then again, you have to ask. And this is what the Radak were saying. A wage war against God does not mean what you think it means, which means one of the, let's say, the famous atheists who exist today. Dawkins, if you will. So is Richard Dawkins waging war against God? So what would he say? I don't know what he would say. I think he would have a hard time. I've never met him, so I don't know how clever he really is. I don't know how easy it would be to trap him or not to trap him. But I'll ask you, is he waging war against God? Yes, but his wage of war against God is taking God out of the picture. So then I have to go back and ask myself, so which war against God is being waged over here? Is it this more primitive sense of these guys going up and want to climb the mountain, which is not here? And again, why do I have difficulty with it, the description of going up into heaven? It goes back to the mountain. Why build it on a mountain? Right. Sorry, not why build it in a valley? Build it on a mountain. Because you really want to get up into heaven, right? So start. There's some really high mountains in the area, by the way. Matter of fact, they can go up to Ararat, right? Right? We're the boat after the flood, right? That's a really high mountain. Start over there, build your tower there. You're halfway there, or at least theoretically. But my point is that they're not doing that. They travel away from there. They travel in the other direction. They go to the valley and they start building a valley. Okay, let's start looking at some commentaries, and then we will. I don't want any answers. You gonna give me an answer?
Yeah.
I don't want it. They pay me a minimal amount of money to give answers. Let's go on. See, the advantage of you not actually answering is that anything I say later, you can say, oh, I was going to say that. Good. Write it down. In source number 7, the Emek Davar, that's the Netziv, this is a 19th century source. The Nisrefa l'Srefa, Kol Mikra Ein Bo Inyan Shera'ui Lahudia L'Inyan Hasur Mali Im Hayulam Avanim L'Binyan O Mali Ba'etzuma O Asu Srefot L'Vanim. Who cares what they built? I already asked this question. Who cares what they used to build their city or their tower? We already have a city which was built before, which was in source number 8, which we won't read. That's the Aleph there. He goes, this is the scriptural hint that they threw Avram into the furnace, which, by the way, is very interesting. Right? You've all heard that Avram was thrown into a furnace. Which furnace is it? And this is something which we tend today to separate from what Chazal actually wanted us to know, which means the furnace was the furnace. The furnace was the famous furnace. The furnace which was being built in order to make the bricks, in order to build the tower. Which means what the Chazal is trying to tell us is that Avram is there. But there's also one thing really interesting then, if Avram is there. He's not agreeing with them. Right? We have all unity. Everyone says the same thing, except for those who disagree. And what do you do with those who disagree? You throw them into the furnace. Now, that, you know what I'm saying? That is real interesting. Look, part... No, this is before. The Mabul is before. Well, yeah, this is afterwards. Quite the opposite. In Seder Olam, it says that Noach dies 10 years after this, and Avram is 48 years old during the building of the tower. So everybody's there. Noach is there, and Avram is there. I don't know if you ever imagined that there would be a meeting between two. They were there. And within this context, Avram rebels against all the others and is thrown into the furnace. So again, if the chronology found in the Seder Olam about Avram is right, that means everybody's together and there's everybody's unified, and anybody who disagrees with what the masses say gets taken care of, and therefore everyone still agrees. Right? Look, in a sense, there are echoes of socialism or communism within this building over here. That everybody's together, everyone is one, and everybody's working together, and everyone, we're going to build something, and so on. And what happens to the naysayer in such a situation? So the Netziv is pointing out, again, he's pointing out correctly, that not that he needs me to approve, but he's pointing out correctly that when Chazal make reference to Avram being thrown in the furnace, who's the one who throws him to the furnace? Tell me the name of the person. No. Terach hands him over. Who's the one who throws him in? It's Nimrod. Okay, I told you we were going to read source number 8. In source number 8, it tells us that Nimrod is a powerful person, Nimrod is the leader, and Nimrod builds a city. Which means the whole background for our building over here, and it also mentions Shinar, by the way, specifically builds in Shinar, which means the whole background to this story is actually laid out when it went through the chronology of the people, and it tells us about Nimrod. Nimrod is there in source number 8, building a city in this area. Okay. Rashi explains the reason that they went to Shinar, the valley, is because they were worried about a place that all of them could live. So again, apparently what he's saying is that, again, to answer my question, which is still troublesome, why not find a mountain? Because on a mountain, it's harder to get everyone live, but in the valley, there's a large enough area. Now, again, just not knowing the real topography of the area, it's very difficult to agree or to disagree with this, but Rashi says this in source number 11. V'yibin sami mikedem, shayu yoshvim sham, l'mala, v'yib moshvam, har hakedem, v'nasu misham, l'tur lehem makom, they went looking for a place, l'chazik et kulam, that all of them can live, v'lo matzu ela shinar. The place they found was Shinar. So why choose Shinar? Rashi is giving us a totally innocent reason. You say innocent compared to what I'll tell you later. A totally innocent reason for choosing this place. And his innocent reason is based upon pragmatism. Again, their unity tells us they want to live together. So if you want to live together, you need a place that can hold on to all of them. The place that hold on to all of them is Shinar. And that's why they have chosen this place. Source 14, the Ibn... Excuse me? I can't guess. I'm sorry. Source number 13, Rashi goes into some detail about how they built it. I mean, sorry, and using the materials, that whole verse about the materials, we're skipping that. And we skip 12. Source 14, Ibn Ezra explains the materials, V'achemer tachatid, pirish kemashma obaloshin Ishmael. Those familiar with Arabic will recognize this. The Ela Bonei HaMigdal Lo Hayu Tipshim. These people building it were not stupid. By the way, he's the second one to tell us they're not stupid. Actually, the sequence is the other way around. Ibn Ezra is the first one to say they're not stupid, and then the Radak follows him and says, they're not stupid. They were not, again, the Radak said they weren't stupid, and it wasn't literally to get up into heaven, like Rashi had said. The Ibn Ezra, who's before Rashi, writes, they were building it, weren't stupid, and they weren't trying to get into heaven, and they weren't afraid of another flood, which is, by the way, both things that Rashi said. Which means, think about it, especially going back to the ancient mind. Why build a tower? So there's one of two reasons to build a tower. Bless you. One reason is you want to get to a higher level of elevation where you are because you want to get up, or two, you want to get away from something which is down, right? You want to avoid what's down, or you want to get up. So Rashi gave us both interpretations. Well, not really, because Rashi's really fixing it. But let's just say one is maybe the most simple interpretation. Is they're afraid of another flood. They're afraid of another flood, so you build a tower. But again, all of you are now going to come back and say to me, if you're afraid of another flood, then what do? You live on a mountain, which leads us right back to the same place again. If you're afraid of a flood, you live on a mountain. You want to get into the heavens, you do it on a mountain. Which means everything I've been telling you till now points in one direction, and that is that we have no idea what's going on. Good? That's all I wanted to show you, that we have no idea what's going on. And now we're going back to all of those commentaries you said, you don't know what's going on. You don't know what's going on because you want to avoid a flood. Where should you not live if you want to avoid the water? Don't live in the valley, because in a valley, the water can overflow. If you want to climb into heaven, go from the highest place. So here we're sitting here, and we're saying to ourselves, yeah, this story was completely clear till we started thinking about it. And now we start thinking about it, guess what? Right. But still, what's the better place to build it? It's better to live on a higher altitude than live in the lowest place. That's an absurdity. If I'm afraid of flooding, I'm going to try to get to a higher elevation. Or build another teva. Okay. So Ibn Ezra says, don't think they were stupid. Don't think that they wanted to get to heaven or they're afraid of another flood. But now, why would he say that? Don't think they were stupid. Because according to what we're all thinking, they must have been stupid. He goes on the top of page 3. In the middle of the top line on page 3, the Ibn Ezra continues, V'nei ha-katuv gilach heftzam. The text actually reveals what they were trying to do. V'sof da'atam, and their intention, livnot ir gdola lemoshavam, to build a great city for them to settle. Which means, again, is the main thing the city or is the main thing the tower? Ulivnot migdal gavoa liyot lehem ot ulashem ulatihila. And the purpose of the tower, he's telling us, is for which purpose? It's for which purpose? Lo'ot l'shem l'tihila. What is it for? Which means it's a symbol. It's not for functionality. The Ibn Ezra is telling us that the purpose of the tower is not for functionality. He writes, lo'ot l'shem l'tihila. Just looking if there's a sitter over here. Anybody have a sitter on them? No? Okay. It's okay. There's actually only... It's fine. Tanakh is just as good. No, sit. It's fine. There's a verse which... Good. There's a verse which all of you know.
You need a sitter or Tanakh?
Which sitter you have? Thank you. There's a verse which is used later on. Which is the Haftorah that we read on fast days. So see, this one does not seem to have all of the Haftorah. Haftorah we read on fast days that says, Livnot Yad Vashem. right? You should all be familiar with this phrase, Yad Vashem. So Levnot Yad Vashem. What does Yad Vashem mean? What? No, no. Yad Vashem means a memorial. A memorial. Right, right. That's what I'm saying. It's the pasuk in Yeshayahu. So Levnot Yad Vashem. So I wonder if the shame over here is for our own aggrandizement or there's another purpose. But again, notice what the Ibn Ezra did over here. The Ibn Ezra took the verse and he said, it's not for functionality. The tower is not for functionality. Because if it were for functionality, what would you have to end up saying? That they were stupid. Because it wouldn't work for functionality. And that's an absurdity. And by the way, that's a really important issue, is that we should not assume that ancient people were stupid, right? They're not. Okay. The Radak, in source 15, writes, V'hachimar hayolehem l'chomer. Hachimar hu tit migvel afar b'mayim. V'chomer hu hamugbal misid u'michol b'mayim. V'sham lo he'alem avanim she'yu sorfim lasid v'yelhem livninim hachemer b'mokom hachomer. They didn't have real materials, they didn't have rock. So therefore, what did they do? And again, I want to stress to you that there was more attention given in the initial narrative to what they used, which materials they used, than to anything else. What did the Radak just point out? How do you make the bricks that they made? What materials did he use? The clay. Okay, so just explain to me. Exactly. They took the afar, they added with water, they baked it, and they made bricks. That's what he's telling us. That's the process which was used. Right. So this is how they built. Okay. So now, I told you there's something really terrible over here, something really ominous over here. So, and to the best of my knowledge, nobody says it. Although I think the Radak would have said, oh, yeah, I said it. But we'll see the Radak. It's actually, we already saw two statements of him. We'll see a third statement before we finish. And he'll claim that he said this, and I'll give him full credit. Let's first look at the Ramban in Source 16. The Ramban says, V'ancheh laga al divrei abotenu mordim b'voram. In the words of the rabbis, they rebelled against their creator. V'rodfei hapshat. What does he mean by rodfei hapshat? Those who have set for themselves a goal to explain pshat, like the Ibn Ezra and the Radak. Omim shelo yada'atam ela shayu yachad mechubarim ki yagid hakatuv da'atam pen nafutz. They were unified, and they were afraid of being dispersed. And it doesn't tell us anything else. And if they're right, you tipshim. Then the people would be stupid. Because how can you have one, which is really, what's the population? Ramban says, how could it be that there would be one city enough for everybody? And then the Ramban continues and he says that they really rejected God. And here's where you'll find the Kotzetz Benetiyot. And so on. And you can go through the Ramban, and he's still, by the time we're finished with him, it will not explain what exactly the problem is. So now we're going to go back to some primary sources. 17, 18, and 19 all tell me the same thing. What's the name of the place that they traveled to? What was it called? Shinar, right? So all of these sources, which is really based on the same tradition of Reish Lakish, will ask, why is it called Shinar? Source 17, Vayimtza Bik'a, Sholchu b'chol olam enso makom sheyachzik kulam. They look for a place that can hold on to all of them. V'lo matzu ela be'eretz Shinar. And the only place they found Shinar, and look where it's bold now, Shesham ninaru dor hamabul shehi amuka. What did he just say? This is a valley. It's the deepest place. It's the lowest place around. If it's the lowest place around, what all the dead bodies from...
I'm not
Yes. Ninaru means deposited. Source 22 says the same thing, and you have English there as well, if that helps you. 18, you find the same thing written in the Yerushalmi. K'tiv, v'yemtzu bika be'eretz shinar, v'yeshuvu sham amar esh lakish lomenikro shma shinar, sh'sham ninaru metei dor hamabul. All of the dead from the flood, all of them would go to the lowest place. The remains would sink to the lowest place, which means basically what they're describing, and again, the same thing is in Source 19, v'ti reishim amtecho bavel, and so on, be'eretz shinar, zu bavel lamenikra shmon shinar, amar esh lakish, sh'sham ninaru matei dor hamabul. That's where all of the dead from the flood ended up. If you want to look at Source 22, and then we'll go back in a second. Amar of Ami, kol ha'ochel me'afras sham bavel, anybody who eats from the dirt from bavel, ki'ilu ochel mi'basar avotav, as if he's eating from his ancestors. V'yesh om ki'ilu ochel shkatzim v'ratzim d'chtiv, v'yamach et kol ha'yakum, everything was wiped out. That's a verse about the flood. Amar Reish Lakish, again, the same tradition. L'menikra shmo shin'ar, shakom metei bavel nin'aru l'sham. All of the dead from the flood all ended up at the lowest possible place. Those of you who are not convinced yet, Rashi, who does not tie this together for whatever reason, Source 21 says, it's a Gemara in Brachot, Ra'amakom shalim emenu afar, if you see a place that, it's a list of all kinds of Brachot that you make. So Source 21 says, Ra'amakom shalim emenu afar, Omer Baruch, Omer Voseh, Gozer Mekayin. Bless is God, who says and he does, makes gzerot, makes decrees, and keeps his decrees, which actually sounds like a very ominous verse. So what afar are we talking about? So Rashi, which is Source 20, writes, Makom shenot limimeno afar, a place from where they take, again, how do you translate afar? It doesn't mean dust, it means ash. He says, Makom yesh bibavel, she'ein behima yotzim esham im einot nim aleo afar me'efer makom, v'hu siman hashmad, this is a symbol of the curse and the destruction of the curse of Bavel. Uviyisod Morenu Harav Rabbeinu Yitzchak. This is one of the rare cases Rashi quotes his teacher. He says, "Ra'iti shenot lim misham afar letit levinyanei makom." I've seen that they've taken from this afar to build bricks. So it's just amazing to me that Rashi points this out on the Gemara in Brachot that talks about seeing in Bavel. And he doesn't mention this over here on the Parsha when he goes into detail, which was back in source number 13, he goes into detail about how they built, you know, using the materials. So I told you, there's something ominous over here. If you just have to think about it, and Chazal are pointing us in this direction, if it's the lowest possible place, it's after the flood, what is it that collected in this place? All the bones, all the bodies, all of the... I mean, basically, you know, in our generation, we would almost think about this as Treblinka. I'm saying you would think about this as ashes of bodies afterwards are sitting there, and they say, oh, can you imagine the outrage if somebody said, oh, let's go take all the ashes there and let's go build a city making bricks out of this? I mean, what would be the response of the world if somebody would do such a thing? So, and again, the way that we would then read it would say this would be incredibly disrespectful to Jews, and we would see it as the ultimate act of anti-Semitism, correct? So now I'm going to ask you, if what I am saying is correct, and what leads me in this direction? What leads me in this direction? A very simple point, that they chose to build this in this particular place, which according to Chazal is the lowest place, which means that if they're building a building and they're using bricks, and again, I'm going to remind you, that was the one thing that the Torah gave us incredible detail about. They took the dirt and they added water, and they took the water and they put it in the furnace. And what emerged from the furnace is a brick made out of the remains of the people who were killed in the flood. So now, What other information do we have? What other information do we have? The other information we have that God is missing. So it would seem to me, and again, now we're going to get to everything I said till now, I really have sourced and brought proof to. So now it's just to say, okay, so what's going on? It seems to me that what we have over here is a rejection of God. And a rejection of God to the point that how could a God exist and do this kind of outrage? And what they're trying to do is to build a memorial to the dead. How are they building a memorial to the dead? Right. Which means when you said before, oh, they're doing their own action over here. They're taking they're doing something almost godlike. They're taking the no. It's much worse than that because you didn't know one piece of information, and that is that the raw material they're using is dead bodies. The remains of dead bodies is the ash which remains of dead bodies. Which means when you realize what they're using to build their tower. And this will be this will be a memorial, which means it seems to me that we have a generation of people whose simple conclusion is, and it could be that Noah and it could be that others, say that, oh yeah, there's a benevolent God who created the heaven and earth, and it's something which they cannot possibly believe. Which, by the way, if somebody in a post-Holocaust generation would come to us and say, how can I believe in God after Auschwitz? What are you going to say to them? I'm not saying that we'll accept that position, but people who are children of survivors, what are you supposed to say to them? So over here, these children of survivors are standing there and saying, how could there be a benevolent God? And there is one person who says there is a benevolent God. There's a person who stands for the belief in God, a God of chesed, right? And who is that one person? Avraham. And what do they do with Avraham? They throw him into the furnace. They say this can't be, which means they had unity, which is a good thing, but their unity was a belief in themselves, was a non-belief in God, and they could not tolerate any other opinion. And when faced with another opinion, they were willing, again, for them, it was an outrage. For Avram to speak about a God whose kind was an outrage as far as they were concerned, and that's the context of Avram getting thrown into the furnace. Yeah. Right. Correct. Look, I'm not drawing an absolute parallel between the Holocaust generation and this generation, but I am pointing out that there are some. They could, but there seems to be a lot of. You know, sometimes when people reject God, you don't know if it's that I don't believe in God or I'm really mad at God. And I can be so mad at God that I can say, well, I don't believe in God. So now you can now question, I'm not a trained psychologist, and it's hard to interpret motivations thousands of years afterwards from reading a text. But again, I'm pointing out what information do we have that I said all the way through? There's no mention of God, even though there are those who see it as an attack against God. How is it, what's the greatest attack against God when God is just doesn't exist? That would say, and that seems to be what all of these commentaries are pointing at, total rejection of God's existence. What do they do? It's not that they emulate God and say, you know, like Avram says, well, if God is full of chesed, I should be full of chesed. If God visits the sick, then I should visit the sick. God helps the poor, I should help the poor. What they do is that they use what symbolizes the incredible anger against God. Again, and you could now interpret this however you want, but they use, and that's what I keep saying, they're using the remains. It's almost, that's what I said, is that the reality over here is so frightening, so ominous, but when you see the text, you realize that I generally do convince myself by the time I finish with the class that I'm right and there's no other way of reading this, and I recognize there could be another way of reading this, but I'm going to go off on a limb here. There's no other way of reading this. I'm saying the problems are so profound in the other interpretations, there's no other way of reading this. They choose this particular place because it's the lowest place. Chazal then tell us what's in the lowest place, do the math. In the lowest place is where all the remains ended up. If they're using the raw materials which are found here, because they don't have rocks, and they could have had rocks because they could have gone to the mountain, but they choose to build in the valley, and they use the materials in the valley, then you realize really what's going on over here. This tower which is going up is all a symbol in their minds to the lack of God's existence. So therefore, a symbol to the lack of God's existence, which is what this unity led to. And what were the words that God said? What did he say to them? Or say to himself, as it were. Pasuk Hey, back in the first source. Vayered Hashem lirot et ha'ir ve'et ha'migdal asher banu b'nei Adam. Vayomer Hashem, God said, Him am echad v'sava echad. They're one people in one language. V'zech yichilam lasot. And this is what they do with their unity? Which means the unity is a good thing. We're going to get to it at the end of the ages. We'll all speak one language. We'll get to the end of days. But that using this to reject God instead of recognizing God, okay, so that means that humanity is going to take a really long detour until we can get back to this point of trying to build something together, because what they built together was a testimony against God's existence instead of a testimony of God's existence. Yeah. Correct. Correct. It's all about us. Correct. 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 And again, I'll point out, it's... Yes. Correct. God is not there. It's Lanu. God has taken the place. Yes. So what, to speed up the process? By the way, I was going, as I got here this morning, I said, I had a note in my mind to look up how they made bricks and how exactly the process was, so I did not get there. Yeah.
It's so overwhelming to me, even knowing what happened in the Holocaust, that they did build things out of skin,
right,
teeth, and all that. How did they see that afar, that they're trying to build a different man out of the ashes?
It could be in their mind, out of the ashes of destruction, we're going to build something big. Again, I'm just giving you the information, and I'm... Okay, I'm sorry. You'll go to the office afterwards and complain, okay? Look, if you... Yeah. Yes. 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 Correct. Correct. Look at source number 26, the Radak. And again, I want to point out to you, we already saw the Radak in source number 15, and we saw the Radak in source number 10. In source number 10, he told us they weren't stupid. It's not a literal thing. They didn't go literally fight against God. In source number 15, he told us why these materials and exactly what they used, right? Again, remember, it's the Radak in source 15 saying, they, Hutit, right, he tells exactly, made from the Afar, and right, it's the same Radak in source 26, which is actually the verse before, that says, V'nikra makomahu eretz shinar, v'hinis keret lamala. It was mentioned earlier in context of Nimrod. Ki kfar katavnu ki anyano hu achar flagahaya, meaning he says that what's written in chapter 10 happened after what's written here. V'lo sibar kasuv lama nikra shinar, and the text didn't tell us why it's called shinar. V'razal omru lafi shemeitei me hamabul nin arusham lafi shehi bika'a. And the rabbis tell us that this is basically the drain where all the water drained out after the flood, which means the Radak didn't say what I said, but if you follow all the pieces in the Radak, it would sound to me very much that he understood exactly what they said. Last source, this was a relative of the Rambam, as far as we can tell, and he learned together with the Rambam's son, source number 27. It's called Pirish Kadmon mi Beit Midrashot Shor of Prachya, found in the Shitata Konmanim, explaining the Gemara in Shabbat. The Gemara there, it said, whoever eats from the dirt of Bavel, is eating their ancestors, he writes, "V'arminim b'gemara ochel me'afar bavel ki'ilu ochel me'atzmot avotav, shelo nikra shma shinar elami shum shinaru kol metei hamidbar l'sham." Because, again, he goes right back to what the way that I understood it, because of all of the dead from the time of the flood all ended up over here. So I absolutely apologize for ruining your day. I apologize for telling you something which is so horrific. But as far as I can tell, what I've told you today is pshat. As far as I can tell, nobody has ever said this in a clear fashion, but I don't see any alternative. If I saw an alternative, I would tell you. What? I don't know exactly. So, if you're horrified, I apologize. Yes. Shinar from the word na'er, which would be the way that in Source 22 that it's translated there, it's deposited, shaken out. Shinar means to shake it out, but it means that it all got, it's like a drain. It all goes there. Yes. Right. It's a place. It's a central place in Babel. It's a valley in Babel. I'm sorry, I didn't look on a map to see exactly where it is. Anyway, have yourselves. No. After this wonderful uplifting class, everyone have a good week.